Production. Recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 42 of the Geocaching Podcast. Just wanted to welcome you to 2008. Hopefully everybody's New Year's went well and they had an excellent Christmas time since we didn't have a Christmas show. I hope you guys just enjoyed the Christmas music that we put out. I want to welcome back to our show as co-host today, Montu Ryder. Montu, how was your Christmas?
Oh, it was very good. And I definitely enjoyed the Christmas music you put out. Very good choice.
Thank you. Did you get anything fun for Christmas?
Not too much. Just a lot of rest and relaxation for the old job, and got everything prepped up for our event, which we'll talk about on a later show.
Hey, that sounds good. Hey, you know what? I got a new Garmin. I got a GPS map 76 CSX. It was fun. I had to actually go hunt for it. My wife gave me the coordinates to where it was at, so that was a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun playing with it. I haven't had a chance to actually use it caching yet because we got about a bunch of snow today, and I was kind of wanting to go out today and use it, but we got a bunch of snow today, so I didn't get a chance to use it since then. So that's pretty much what's been going on our end. You said you had your event went well?
Yes, we had a wonderful turnout this past Sunday, and it was truly fantastic. I think I've actually crashed the email servers for MSN. I'm getting emails at a rate of 2 to 3 a minute, and they're still coming in. They are still coming in from that thing.
So we have a fun show today. Those of you who listen to our podcast at all know that sometimes Daryl W4 co-hosts with me, and Daryl W4 is one of the co-hosts of the Cachemaniacs, along with Dree, or Firefly03. Today we have them on our show, and in honor of their one-year anniversary for podcasting, the Cachemaniacs podcast, we're going to actually have them on the show, and we're going to actually do it Cachemaniacs style.
We got cash, we got cash, we can load it in a flash. We're crazy Louis, really, won't you join us in our task?
I got questions, I want quotes,
I want several antidotes.
We can take it to another level, we'll end up with an earful. Cash, geocache, hey, technology is smash. Don't be scared, it's only us, we won't feed you balderdash. Just a joke, we'll be in funny. We're not talking about money, we got cashomania. You can say we are insania. Cash, we're the cashomania.
Well, welcome to the geocaching podcast / Cachemaniacs episode. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
So this is going to be an interesting show because me and Monty Ryder are actually going to ask you guys the questions that you ask everybody else. So it ought to be a fun show today.
Yeah, it feels a little weird to be on that side of the mic.
I bet it does.
Time to turn the tables.
Oh, yeah. As Leo Laporte likes to say, turn the table Tuesday, but it is a turn the table Tuesday, I guess.
Yeah, it is, actually.
All right, so first and obvious one is, how did you guys choose your screen name?
Well, I actually picked my screen name a long time ago, and it came from AOL, actually, before it was called AOL, it was Apple Link Personal Edition. And they kind of picked that one for me, and it just kind of stuck ever since.
And I came up with Firefly03 in, how long ago? Firefly was actually a name that I used back in early college years. And then, Firefly was taken, so I had to add the 03. And I actually got the 03 from when I started making my jewelry and doing that as a business.
Now, when did you start, and what drew you to geocaching?
Let's see. That was back in August 2005. And the way that I got started in it was I was actually into podcasting already at that point. Had a different show altogether called Michigan Cycling Podcast. And one of my interests had been historical things, particularly like railroads and architecture, that kind of stuff. So I was looking for a way to do audiobooks that would allow us to have some kind of trigger for geographic points on a rail trail. Well, I found out about this geocaching thing in my research for that. Well, the patio books went by the wayside, and now I geocache all the time. But when I told Dree about it the first time, the quote was, "That sounds stupid."
Yep, that's exactly what I said, too. I found out from Daryl, obviously. I started about in August of, what was that, 2005, Daryl?
That was 2005.
Okay. And I've been hooked ever since.
We went to our first cache, which was our first physical cache, I should say, which was Friendship Altar at Mackinac Island. And, you know, she was scrambling to beat me to the rock. And, it's kind of been that way ever since.
No, I'm not so bad anymore.
Sounds like a familiar story. We have the same type of thing. We rush to the caches each other, too. So do you guys have any interesting stories about your early caching experiences?
Oh, boy. The only one that I can really think of is just early on, again, being up on Mackinac Island and walking around, not knowing exactly what we needed to do, still fumbling around a little bit. But probably the best quote then I can say is the first time we found the cache Friendship Altar, and Daryl looks at me and goes, "Do you want to find another one?" And I'm like, "Yeah, let's go."
Well, I can probably go back to my first cache, my first DNF actually, which was something by the name of like Reflection over here about a mile and a half from the house, and went to look for it. No idea what I was doing. I'm running around in this little itty-bitty wooded area next to the Troy Public Library and the statue that used to sit outside of the Kmart World Headquarters, and I'm in sandals on a hot August morning, and I was just sweating a storm up because it was like 89 degrees with like 50-something percent humidity. Totally wrong attire. And I should not have been caching in sandals. Couldn't find the cache and ended up stepping on a yellow jacket that stung my toe. And that was pretty much it for the rest of the day. Oh, I ended up going out. I did go out later that day, found Boland Park, which was my first actual find. And kind of got a good feel for what it was like from that one. Went back like a week later, I think, to find that Reflection or Reflect Me cache, whatever it was called.
Splitting Headache.
Splitting Headache, thank you. And found that one pretty quick and easy once I knew a little bit about caching.
Now, with which GPSR did you start caching with?
Well, I started with the SportTrack Pro, and I believe I actually had passed that one down to Dree the first time we went caching because I had a bike mount for my Meridian Color. So I really started off using both of those, and we had a little bit of trouble using those units.
Now, which GPSR are you currently using?
Well, we've gone through a number of them since then, but my current unit is the 60 CSX. And Dree, what are you using?
I'm using the Vista.
Okay.
Okay. Now, are you doing paperless caching, or how are you loading the GPSR?
We are almost entirely paperless caching, the exception being FTFs. And for most of the paperless caching, we're using Mac caching, which loads both of the GPSRs and creates the files for CacheMate. And we're using Palm Tungsten Cs, both of us, with CacheMate, and logging in the field using the WAP interface.
Okay, what are some key items that you take with you as you cache?
Well, for me, aside from the GPS, my space pen, but Firefly is usually one who takes her bag of caching goodies.
Inside my bag, I always have a mirror with me. I try to have some wet naps, some deep wood off wipes. Let's see, what else is normally in there?
Purell.
Yep, Purell, some hand sanitizer.
Geocoins to give away.
Of course. Got to have the geocoins. And then I normally also have some Ziploc baggies to do some cache repair, some extra logs to do some cache repair again, too. And I always have my space pen with me that's actually connected to my GPS.
How did I know those coins were coming there? Now, what motivates you to continue geocaching, and what do you like most about it?
Oh, what do I like most about it? Probably just the fact that it gets me out of the house again. I've always loved being outdoors, and I was raised when hiking and everything, and I tried to get Daryl to go, and he was always, no, I don't want to go, I don't want to go, I don't want to go. So now he's got a point that he has a place to go at the end, so we can actually go out and hike now. So I that's what kind of keeps me going, is it's something we can do together.
It's a hike with a purpose.
Yes.
And you agree that said this was silly?
Yes. I stand corrected.
Well, you know, what actually keeps me going, I think, more than anything else, is actually the community. We've met so many good friends, and obviously we enjoy the community from doing the Cache Maniacs podcast, but you know, we really just have such great interaction with people that otherwise we probably never would have met from all kinds of positions. You know, we have, you know, accountants, we have guys working on the line at GM, ATM teller, or service people. You know,
you have the ATM tellers.
Yeah, ATM tellers, yeah, you know, the little chips. I can't remember what his position is actually called, but it's ATM service tech or something like that. In any case, you know, we have such a range of professions, such a range of people, that it really is exciting to meet with them and just kind of spend some time and, you know, get to know them.
All right, what influence, good or bad, has geocaching had on your life?
I think we'll start with Firefly on this one.
Well, good. We've made a lot of new friends. I've learned a lot. Bad, I'm never home anymore. And my collection of geocoins has grown exponentially.
Yeah, we have a overgrowth of geocoins.
No. I'm never going to have too many.
Yeah. Bad is the addiction factor, I would have to say, that jonesing that you get every so often, especially come winter when you just have to get out of the house and find a cache.
Yeah. I've had that the last couple weeks, too, where I just need to get out.
Do you have any signature items or trademark of any type?
Oh, well, we actually have quite a few. The first signature item that I had was actually a set of 4x6 prints that you can actually see them on my Flickr site. I want to say I did 5, maybe 6 of those, just photos that I had taken. Dree's saying it's 6. And then from there, we went on to the GPS food at our first Fall Fun Days. And that one was really, really well received. We had 3 different label wrappers that we took and wrapped around 2 AA batteries, and then shrink wrapped, so they looked like little candy bars. And we just set out, what was it, about 150 of those?
Yeah.
And they were gone quickly, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Not just because they were free food, but they were really cool looking. And we've seen more than a few of those in people's signature item collections. Firefly, why don't you tell them about yours at that point, too?
Well, my very first signature item was actually a stone ring that was on elastic band. Again, and that just comes from the fact that I was making jewelry, and it was just something that was kind of a me. And then we, like Daryl said, went on to the GPS food. And then we did a second version, which was the GPS power, which were, they kind of look like the power bars with the wrappers. And then, of course, we went into coins. And we have, let's see, we did 3 different coins in 2006. We've got the full size, the 2 minis, and then for 2007, we did the 4 set of Pepper Geo coins.
So, yeah, we have a total of 7 coins that we've released now, but only 4 icons on geocaching.com, because the 4 different photos of the Pepper coin, each still has its own own icon for just, you know, Pepper coins. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, what has been your favorite place to geocache?
You know, that's a really, really tough one. We've not gone caching in as many locales as we want, but you know, I do enjoy caching in some of the metro parks around here. That's a lot of fun. It's a lot more laid back, and we can see some nice scenery as well.
As long as it's woods, I'm not too picky. Although I do have to admit that I would really like to get to Hawaii.
Yeah, Hawaii is definitely one on the list, and then Australia and New Zealand. You know, none of the cheap places, of course.
The list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I hear that. I'm the same way. I think, where can we take a vacation that I can cash that would be a new state, that would be a new place, that would be fun?
Now, which types of caches do you prefer to find?
Oh, I have to say, I'm still a sucker for ammo boxes in the woods. Although, I do have to admit, some cleverly hidden micros are actually fun to find, too. And I love something new.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to have the really icky answer here. It really depends on the day. You know, I love quality caches, and that's really what it comes down to. But, you know, sometimes I'm really game for doing, you know, a power run, and I want to hit, you know, nothing but the skirt lifters and the magnetic key fobs. But other days, you know, I'd really like to go after some challenging multi-cache that's really well put together and takes me to some interesting places.
What are some favorite caches that you've hidden?
Probably my one is Go Fish. It's actually a two-stage multi. In the first stage, to be able to get the coordinates, you've actually got to put together a 3D fish puzzle. And then written on that, it has the coordinates.
And that is a pretty interesting find, and reading some of those logs is pretty cool. For me, I would probably have to say First Geo Savings and Loan, which is kind of a cache that never really panned out the way that I wanted it to. The concept was to have a whole series of these First Geo Savings and Loans, and it was going to be all Geo coins, and it had started off with a nice little deposit book that looked very similar to the kind of deposit slips that you have for your checking account, you know, like at the counter there at your local bank. But it was done with geocaching. So you had the deposits and withdrawals as separate lines, and you put tracking numbers in as the dollar amounts. So it was a really cool concept, just the way that it was done. The cache page was written up kind of like, you know, the grand opening text would be for some kind of quick radio release. And it got really great reviews, but I never got around to finding a good spot for a second location because I really wanted it to be next to a freeway or something that was really high traffic. So, you know, it just kind of didn't work. But, you know, it's still going, the one location I do have is still going strong, and it got hit about four times just this weekend.
Cool.
Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, no, I just was saying cool. Go ahead.
Okay. Do you have any good or bad Muggle stories to share?
Ooh, well, I think we both have pretty much the same bad Muggle story. I think our worst one was a town just outside of Owosso when we were actually on our way to the train place that I used to volunteer with. Actually, both of us used to volunteer up there. And we did this cache right after another group of cachers had done the cache. And we were just kind of sitting, it's a little park with playground, some kids were playing, and we just kind of sat there for a while waiting for the kids to leave. Well, they wandered off, ran up this hill, and couldn't see them anymore, so we went and found the cache, logged it, put it back. As we're driving away, we see the kids coming down the hill. So we had to get to Owosso and the train place, did our business there, came back, swung by to check on the cache, and it had been demolished. And we did one of the kids there. You want to continue, Jerry?
Daryl put the fear of his parents in him. It was kind of interesting to watch Daryl assume a role that's not normally his fatherly role. But we walked up to him and basically said, you know, this isn't for you guys to play with. You know, it's a game. It's not yours. And you shouldn't touch it. And where's your parents? We need to talk to your parents. And so he was running scared a little, but we ended up just letting him off with that.
Aside from events, have you run into any geocachers on the trail?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, more than a few times.
The most eventful one that I can remember is our first Define party. We were heading out to an LPC behind a hotel that's nearby, and we were there, and next thing you know, somebody else comes around the corner, and we were sitting there talking, and then somebody else comes, and then somebody else comes, and there was probably, what, 7 of us?
Yeah, I don't think that was actually our first Define party, but yeah, we had at least 7, I think more, and it's midnight in the back corner of a hotel parking lot in this business district that's not known to be, you know, bad, but not especially good. So that was an interesting one.
Now, are there any good event stories you'd like to tell?
So many. You know, it's hard to pick one good story to tell, but I'm going to probably do our Cash Maniacs launch event, which we worked our butts off on that event while we were there. It wasn't too bad getting it prepped and everything, but yeah, we underestimated the attendance on that one. I think we ended up ultimately with about 74 people showing up for that event, and we were running around, and it was a blast because we, you know, people we didn't know before then had shown up to check it out, and we had our first few interviewees at the party. So, yeah, we really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Probably, I don't know, there's too many of them to think about. The Coffee Queens and Cigs, our first event, was very eventful, but I think the Cash Maniacs launch party was pretty well done, too. There was a lot more people that showed up than we expected, and it just ended up being a lot more fun than we had hoped.
Well, and here I thought you were going to talk about your first Fall Fun Day experience.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. All right, yeah, no, I got to tell that story. The very first event that we went to was Michigan's geocaching organization's Fall Fun Days. And there we had a game going on that was very similar to a poker run. And what we were doing is we had the list of the caches that we had to plug in, and we're walking across this, it's called a tridge. It's kind of a bridge that has like 3 places to be able to go on, and it meets in the middle. I'm sitting here plugging in the coordinates into my GPS, and I'm looking down, watching Dara out of the corner of my eye, figuring if somebody or something gets in my way, he'll move, I can move. So I'm just plugging away, and next thing you know, boom! I run into something, it pushes me back on my feet, and I look down, and it's a stupid bench. I ran into the bench so hard, I still have a scar.
And I might add that that is one of the reasons why we decided to get the rhinos. Unfortunately, we don't use the rhinos anymore, but that was one of the reasons why we decided to get them, is so that one person could enter and the other could pass it to the person so that, you know, Dree didn't have to run into any more benches.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any learning experiences that you'd like to share besides the bench running into benches?
Yes, watch where you're going.
Yeah, don't stare at the needle. Yeah, and that comes down to probably my most valuable lesson has been don't stare at the needle, don't stare at the map too much. You know, try to get close to the cache and use your geosense from there. And it does take some time to build your geosense, but once you do, that's pretty much going to be it.
Take a step back and look at the entire forest instead of just the trees. You might see something that you might have missed earlier. Think about where that cache could be, and try to think, if I was placing it, where could I put it?
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd care to share that you'd like to see improved in geocaching?
Well, really, I think my big pet peeve lately has been how seriously some people take the hobby or sport, whatever you want to call geocaching. They have gotten a little bit over the top, in my opinion, as to their involvement with what they think are rules. And in many cases, it's simply stuff that's not written, and it's kind of courtesy. But, you know, it's a game. We all play the way that we like to play. Don't worry about it too much if someone else is playing by a different set of rules, unless it interferes with the way that you want to play the game. You know, just let people play the way they want to play.
Yeah, I have to agree with Daryl. And then, obviously, bring back the virtuals. I love the virtuals. I love the Earth caches. I'm glad they brought back the Earth caches, and I wish they could bring back the virtuals. I understand why they don't. It's just, it's too hard to regulate, and that's one of the reasons why they have the waymarking. But in my opinion, waymarking just doesn't work as well as the virtuals did.
Yeah, well, for one, there's way too many waymark points out there, and it's kind of tough to filter out what you want. We did mention this in one of the caches of the Roundtable episodes, too, but my big thing about GC itself has been the virtual caches, because I'm into that history, and I'd really like to see virtuals come back as a history cache, or, you know, renamed into a history cache or something like that.
Yeah, that's one of our favorite things, too.
I'd have to agree there, too.
Of the many slogans and taglines for geocaching, which is your favorite?
Probably one that I just learned. It's guilt. It's grown up idiots looking for Tupperware.
Yeah, we had two interviews recently that they used that one, and that is great. And I think that's going to stick with me as my new favorite one. But aside from that, it's always been using $1 billion military equipment to find Tupperware in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you classify geocaching? Sport, hobby, game, or something else?
I think it's a little bit of everything, but most definitely an obsession. It's a sport in the fact that it does get you out, and there can be some competitive nature to it. It's a hobby because, well, it's just something we enjoy doing, but it's also a game because, you know, there's certain things that are accepted and not accepted.
It really depends on how I'm referring to it, what I call it at the time. Most often, I think I do call it a game, but overall, I just refer to it as an activity.
But in order for it to be a game, wouldn't you have to win it? And you really can't win.
Yeah, not necessarily, because it constantly continues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like playing some of the games from, you know, way back when, where you never really ended. You just had rounds of play, and it's you're competing against your own score to get better and better and better. Kind of like solitaire.
Yeah, that's true. What are some of your other hobbies besides geocaching?
Oh, too many to list, but we'll go through the quick and easy ones. I'm into photography very much. Don't get as much time to do that now as I'd like to. Production, obviously, with all of this kind of stuff. And even, quite frankly, just kind of sitting around and vegging, but I don't do that so much anymore. In watching some movies, especially now that we've got Blu-ray, it's like watching movies all over again for the first time.
Yeah.
My biggest thing is I'm a crafter. I love crafts. You name it, I've done it, I've tried it. No, I don't know. I just like to play.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is your favorite movie, television show, and musical group of all time?
Well, let's see. For favorite movie, I think I'm going to actually pick Down Periscope. Kelsey Grammer movie from, the 90s. Pretty bad movie, but it's just one of those fun, brainless movies I zone out to. Television
pull
show.
And let you put out.
Exactly. Probably my favorite television show of all time would have to be American President, West Wing, written by Aaron Sorkin, the gentleman who wrote American President. But he only did the first like three seasons, and it is noticeable. And I kind of lost some of the interest in it those last five seasons. Musical group, Bare Naked Ladies.
For me, favorite movie, there's too many to list. Probably the first handful that I can think of is Legend. It's an old movie with Tom Cruise. Pump Up the Volume. National Treasures. Both of the National Treasures are really good. I really enjoy those. TV shows. I don't know. I like the crime scene investigation type things, but Daryl doesn't let me watch those around him. He gets bored with them. And probably Scrubs. I really enjoy Scrubs. That one's funny, too. And music. I can listen to just about anything that's on.
All right. Now, we have a few questions that are specifically with with podcasting. When did you start podcasting, and what drew you to it?
Well, that's definitely one for me, because Dree still isn't that much into podcasting. I started back in the early days of podcasting, March of 2003, I want to say. That sounds too early, but it was with the Michigan Cycling Podcast, and I really loved the concept of the narrowcasting and doing shows on things that you really wouldn't find on any other medium whatsoever. So I got into it, and I started producing my own show after about 5 months of listening to many of the other shows, many of which are now gone, unfortunately. But about 2 years into Michigan Cycling Podcast, I decided that it was suddenly taking up all of my time, and I wasn't getting out to do my cycling, which is why I did the show in the first place. So that's how Cashmaniacs came about. And then Dree actually helped out in the last, about 4 months of Michigan Cycling Podcast.
Yeah, something like that.
And then we decided to do this show together, and we have Cashmaniacs and Cashers the Roundtable, which we just started this last summer, and really enjoy doing both of those.
Now, how many cashers would you say you've interviewed?
I can tell you exactly how many we've interviewed now. It is 59. Actually, no, I should say that. We've done 59 interviews. I'd have to actually sit down and figure out how many cashers that comes down to, because we had a few of those with multiple people on the phone or in the shot. So I am probably guess somewhere in the range of 67.
No, I think it's more than that, because the majority of them are more than one. I think it's close to 80.
Oh, that's a lot of cashers. Especially for just 1 year of podcasting. But what continues to... What? I'm sorry. What motivates you...
tonight.
What motivates you to continue podcasting?
You know, I wish I had some really good, great answer for this, but I just really enjoy doing it, and the feedback that we get from our listeners really makes it worthwhile. You know, it's not cheap, but I enjoy it, and the... audience seems to love it, so we're going to keep doing it for a while.
I love the
fact that we can meet cashers that geographically we would never be able to meet otherwise.
Now, do you have a favorite interview?
You know, I really don't. Ugh. You know, we've had so many great interviews, you know, and even the ones that aren't necessarily as good, we've had a lot of good conversations with some of them after the show wraps up. Yeah, because we do end up talking with a lot of these cashers, sometimes as much as an hour afterward. A good example of that was Tiki. I think, according to the phone bill, we spent 3 hours on the phone with them.
Yes.
And you only heard what was essentially about an hour and 20 minutes of that on the air. So it gives you an idea of some of the just really good conversations we get into. And Tiki was a great interview, don't get me wrong. That's not one of the... bad interviews by any chance, but even our bad interviews, I still think are, you know, good.
Yeah.
I don't think we have bad interviews. Just, you know, some of our interviews are high energy, and that's what I really love. Because when you have that high energy interview, you know that these are people that really enjoy the sport. They're really getting into it, and they like to share. And that's what we really enjoy listening to, and what we enjoy talking to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree. There's too many good ones to be able to say that there's a favorite.
Now, do you have any good or bad interview stories that you'd like to share? Besides the 3-hour phone conversation?
Yeah, you know, I really don't have any standout interview stories per se. We've had a couple of times that have been interesting. One, Dree was a little late with her student that she was tutoring. And more than a little bit late, actually, because if she
was
a little late,
starting.
She would have still been there for the interview. But I had already started the interview, and she walked in, so we had to pause and continue on. We've had a few of the interviewees that have to start their comments over again. And I'm not sure how many people realize, but Cashmaniacs airs the full interview unedited, essentially. And what we mean by that is we're not trimming any of the content out. It is an uncut interview. However, we do give people the opportunity to start over. You know, if they start saying something and they're just tripping over their words, you know, we understand that. Obviously, you know, we're not professionals. We're amateurs. We're enjoying it, and we're doing it for the love of the sport. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go through and I trim out some of the ums and ahs and shorten some of the gaps so that it's easier to listen to and so that it's something that, you know, sounds a little bit better.
I think the story that sticks out of my mind is when we had Nurse Nana over to do her interview. She was sitting in between Daryl and I, and I think it was the rapid response questions. She was trying to look over my monitor as I'm reading the questions, and it was just funny.
Yeah, and you know, we should note that we each have our own display that we're looking at when we do these shows, because we have to have a certain amount of distance between the microphones, which we really don't have enough as it is right now. But, you know, to keep that distance up, we each have our own, and we have a prompter going on that. So it's, you know, the nice black screen with the white text, easy to read, big type, the whole deal. And she's leaning over trying to figure out what it is that we're looking at and what's coming up next. that was one of the few interviews we did as audio in person, and I just love that. And mm-hmm. audio is so much easier and, to me, so much more intimate.
Yeah. All right, are we ready for the rapid response questions?
We are.
Bring it on.
Better be fast, be on your toes, be swift, you must be quick. To answer the question right before you is a precarious trick. A rapid response is what you need, get ready, here we go. Just do your very best and you'll be sure to steal the show. You better be quick, you better be quick, you better be rapidly quick. You better be quick, you better be quick, you better be rapidly quick.
All right. Welcome to the Rapid Response. Remember, there's no right or wrong answers. They're your answers. And today you're playing for a new coin that you guys are going to be releasing. It's yours, so you get to keep it. So here's the first one. Micro or ammo?
Ammo can.
Ammo can.
Standard or multi-cache?
Standard.
Standard.
Virtual or earth cache?
Earth cache.
Virtual.
Placing or finding?
Finding.
Finding.
Urban or woods?
Woods.
You know, it depends on the day, but I'm going to go with woods.
Geocoins or travel bugs?
No brainer. Geocoins.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Coins.
Paper or paperless?
Paperless.
Paperless.
Favorite GPSR?
Whatever's in my hand.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go back to that first Trimble that I mentioned, the $2,500 one.
Favorite PDA or phone?
Oh, again, basically what's over my hand. I'm using the Palm right now.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say Palm.
Caching alone or as a group?
Group.
Group.
Audio only or video podcast?
I have to go for audio.
Audio.
On location or remote interviews?
On location.
I'm going to go for a remote just because it takes a lot less setup on my part.
You've won! Well, thank you guys for being on the show today. It's been a lot of fun interviewing you guys. I've heard these questions so many times. I've listened to your interviews, but I wanted to ask you the questions, and I never got a chance to do that. So here we got the chance to do it with yours.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
So, thank you guys. I want to remind everybody too that we do this thing live every Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Not this interview with Daryl and Dree, but we do a podcast live every Tuesday. Make sure you can join us. You can go to our website. It's geocachingpodcast.info. You can find all the information there on how to join us live. We'd love to have you. We do have a question from SDA Jumpmaster.
Yes, he's emailed it to me, and I've got it now. During his interview, you asked him if he had any event stories to share, good or bad. And he asked you, is there such a thing as a bad interview? To which you replied, yes. Now, what is a bad event?
Bad event. Yeah. We've run into a few of those. Fortunately, we haven't gone to most of the recent ones that we've heard about. But there are the bad events where one of them was torn down within 10 minutes of the start time because no one had shown up. So when someone else showed up, the event was gone. We've had a number of stories like that that were given off air. But there's always the chance of something going wrong in an event, making it rather hazardous, like one of the cachers in our area broke his leg when he was out on the trail. And I think that would classify it as a bad event.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, I'm glad that that SDA Jumpmaster got a chance to put that in. Thank you guys for your input. Like I said, join us again next week. We're going to do it live again next week. If you guys have any other questions for Daryl or Dree, we're gonna, after we stop recording, we're gonna go ahead and unmute the phone. So go ahead and think of your question. Join us for our after show things. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us, and have a good week caching, and we'll see you next week.